Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 17th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
stocks rebound after yesterday's sell-off on Wall Street.
The S&P 500 enters today's triple witching session at an 18-month low.
President Biden says a recession can be avoided.
And Japan defies a global trend and retains super easy monetary policy.
The final Democratic debate in the primary campaign for New York governor is over, plus another mass shooting in a church in Alabama leaves two dead. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. Ninth inning win for the Yankees, comeback win for the Mets, and the Golden State Warriors have won the NBA championship.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak being brought to you by Informatica. In the cloud, your data has the power to do the extraordinary. Manage data across any location in the cloud for accurate and actionable insights. More at Informatica.com.
Now, U.S. futures are on the rise this morning. It's 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 33 points. Dow futures up 240. NASDAQ futures are higher by 112 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 8/32. The yield 3.22%. Yield on the 2-year 3.17%. Right now, NYMEX crude is up 0.7% at $118.40 a barrel. John.
And Nathan, the rise in futures follows yet another sell-off on Wall Street, which saw the S&P 500 close at an 18-month low. It was a sea of red with only 14 stocks in the S&P 500 closing higher. Lori Brignac, the chief investment officer at Invesco, says with inflation and recession fears front and center, the Fed has its work cut out for it.
Monetary policy was too easy for too long, so they've got to make up some ground here to try to stay ahead of it. So unfortunately, I don't think that the news is going to get any better over the next month for the Fed in terms of inflation.
Invesco Chief Investment Officer Lori Brignac making the comments on Bloomberg Business Week. Catch that program weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Wall Street time.
Well, the sell-off has been widespread, John. In fact, more companies in the Russell 3000, excluding financial firms, are trading below their cash holdings. Bloomberg's Doug Krisner has more.
The total number has surpassed the month-end record set during the financial crisis. Smaller cap firms like those in the Russell are particularly sensitive to the health of the domestic economy. And now, as financial conditions tighten, the concern of a recession is in sharp relief. In the last session alone, the Russell 3000 fell 3.5% to its lowest level since 2020. Even so, writers on the Bloomberg MLive blog say when a company's total equity value is less than its cash and marketable securities, bargains can possibly be found. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. And it could be another volatile day on Wall Street. Today is the quarterly event known as Triple Witching. The $3.5 trillion options expiration may lead to short covering, and that could bring temporary relief to the stock market.
And meantime, in Asia, stocks tumbling to a 2-year low as traders fear the global rush to hike interest rates may result in an economic downturn. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, John and Nathan. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell to its lowest level in 2 years. The index has dropped every day this week and is down for a seventh session. That's the longest weekly drop since the onset of the global pandemic in March 2020. Japanese shares dropped and 10-year yields eased from 2016 highs as the Bank of Japan's decision to keep its ultra-loose monetary settings unchanged provided limited stimulus as volatility in the yen grows. China and Hong Kong stocks gained, the only markets in Asia in the green. This as Beijing's pro-growth policy lent its support to views that their equities will keep outperforming. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. After that Bank of Japan decision, the yen weakened as much as 1.8%. BOJ Governor Haruhiko Kuroda addressed the recent sell-off in the currency.
The recent rapid weakening of the yen is negative for the economy as it increases uncertainties and companies will have a harder time putting together their business plans.
Governor Haruhiko Kuroda, speaking through an interpreter, added a reference to foreign exchange rates to its list of risks following the yen's rapid weakening to a 24-year low this week.
In Europe, Christine Lagarde has told euro area finance ministers that the European Central Bank's new anti-crisis tool will kick in if the borrowing cost for weaker nations rises too far far or too fast. Sources say at a meeting in Luxembourg, Lagarde told ministers that the new mechanism will be intended to prevent irrational market movements from putting pressure on individual euro nations.
Well, President Biden's weighing in on the economy back here in the U.S. John, he says a recession can be avoided. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. The president is reiterating his message that the U.S. is in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome inflation. And while he says the recession is not inevitable, he acknowledges that Americans are really down on the state of the country. He made these comments in an interview with the AP. That's his first with a print outlet since taking office. And it took place a day after the Fed executed the biggest interest rate hike in almost 3 decades in order to cool inflation. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. Reactions still pouring into Elon Musk's first meeting with Twitter employees. He told staffers they shouldn't worry about changes to their jobs once he takes over, as long as their work is, quote, exceptional. Let's get more on his remarks and his concerns about fake Twitter accounts from Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow.
He said that whether Twitter pursues a subscription or an ad model, he's still concerned about bots nonetheless, and that essentially the goal is to make Twitter an expensive platform, in other words, requiring some form of payment that disincentivizes bot activity.
During the 45-minute address to employees, Bloomberg said Ludlow says Musk did not address whether he was committed to the deal. Market conditions have moved sharply since his $44 billion bid to buy Twitter.
All right, John. Well, shares of Adobe, we're keeping an eye on those this morning. They are down 3%. The maker of software for design professionals reduced its annual revenue forecast. Adobe says its business is being affected by currency fluctuations, seasonal shifts in demand, and the decision to end sales in Russia and Belarus after the invasion of Ukraine.
And after yesterday's sell-off, the futures this morning in the green, Dow futures up 244 points, a rise of 0.8%. S&P E-mini futures up 35 points, that's up about 1%. The NASDAQ futures up 120 points, that's a rise of 1%. 10-year yield this morning is up 2 basis points at 3.21. This is Bloomberg. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. The final Democratic debate in the primary campaign for New York governor is over. U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi and New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams criticized Governor Kathy Hochul's strategy toward gun violence. Suozzi questioned Hochul on donations from the National Rifle Association when she served in Congress from 2011 to 2013. Hochul said that she has evolved and that voters are more interested in her agenda as governor now rather than her political stances a decade ago. All of the candidates on WNBC were asked about their vision to improve the state, including Hochul.
Don't bet against New York. We've been down before. We will come back even stronger. We've always demonstrated our resiliency, our tenacity. It's in our DNA as New Yorkers.
Early voting starts Saturday in New York. Lawmakers heard gripping testimony from top aides of then Vice President Pence and President Trump during the latest hearing from the January 6th committee. Rioters came within 40 feet of Pence, and former President Trump listened to conservative law professor John Eastman's plan to have Pence not certify then President-elect Biden's win. The committee now wants to interview the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny, after new emails were revealed from the conservative activist. Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin talked about takeaways from the committee hearing and the potential legal outcome.
I think what they're going to be doing is trying to prove each of the 7 prongs of their conspiracy. They're saying the president engaged in a 7-part conspiracy. Mm-hmm. The first was the big lie. The second was to replace the acting attorney general. The third was to pressure Pence. The fourth was to pressure state officials. The fifth was to do the false electors scheme. The sixth was the violent mob, and the seventh was inaction when this was going on.
Former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin spoke with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg's Sound On. 2 people are dead and another wounded when police in Alabama say a gunman opened fire at a church in Vestavia Hills. Police say a suspect is in custody. Democratic and Republican senators are at odds over how to keep firearms from dangerous people. Lawmakers said they remain divided over how to define abusive dating partners so they could be legally barred from purchasing firearms. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's 5:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. And good morning, John Stashower.
All right, good morning, John. The Golden State Warriors had that run of three NBA championships, five straight trips to the finals, and then it appeared that run was over with injuries and Kevin Durant's defection to Brooklyn. 2 years ago, they were the worst team in the NBA, and yet there were the Warriors last night winning game six in Boston, 103-90, winning the finals 4-2, a finals where every game was decided by 10 or more points. That had never happened before. Warriors led by 22. Celtics cut that deficit to 8. Steph Curry made sure it got no closer. Curry was amazing, 34 points. He was the finals MVP. Yankees and Mets with one-run wins at home for the Yanks. That win came at the end.
Swung on, hit in the air to deep right center. It is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game. Anthony Rizzo hit a one-out ninth inning walk-off home run to right center field, and the Yankees beat the Rays 2-1.
On WFAN, a game with a total of only seven hits. Yanks had to scratch the starter, Luis Severino. He's got COVID, so they used three young pitchers, and together they allowed only three hits. And the Yankees moved 31 games over 500. The Mets trailed Milwaukee 4-1. Mark Canna tied the game. Two-run homer, fifth inning. Mets topped the Brewers at Citi Field 5-4. A Canadian, Adam Hadwin, is the U.S. Open leader at Brookline, a 4-under-66. Rory McIlroy in the group that trails by one shot. Dustin Johnson, part of a larger group, two back. A rough 52nd birthday for Phil Mickelson, who's never won the Open. He's finished second six times. He just returned after 4 months off, and Mickelson is 12 shots behind. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. Ahead of the open on Wall Street, Dow futures after yesterday's sell-off, up 267 points. S&P E-mini futures, they're up 37 points right now, 1% rise. NASDAQ futures up 132 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Well, traders may have come to grips with the path ahead for the Federal Reserve, so what's next? We're going to speak with Patrick Armstrong, the Chief Investment Officer at Plurality Wealth. That's just ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are on the rise this morning, hinting that stocks could be set for a relief rally at the end of the worst week for the S&P since March of 2020. Saw the benchmark index enter a bear market amid fears of a growing recession. Growing fears of a recession. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 37 points. Dow futures up 268. NASDAQ futures are higher by 128 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 6/32, yield 3.21%. Yield on the 2-year, 3.16%. NYMEX crude is up 0.9% or $1.03 at $118.62 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $4.20 at $18.54.10 an ounce. The euro is at 1.0535 against the dollar. The yen, 134.53. At 9:15 Wall Street time, we get reports on industrial production, capacity utilization, and manufacturing production. At 10 a.m., it is the leading index. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now, here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The next January 6th committee hearing is on Tuesday. The wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny, is being called to answer questions before the panel about her role in the effort to overturn the 2020 election. Prospects for a quick bipartisan deal on gun safety legislation dimmed. Senate negotiators say one unresolved issue is how to close a so-called boyfriend loophole aimed at barring abusive dating partners from having guns. The Warriors are the 2022 NBA champions. They beat the Celtics in Game 6, 103-90. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-3. The Orioles won. The Nationals lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 5:20 on Wall Street. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. The S&P 500 has suffered its worst week since March 2020. It tumbled 3.3% in yesterday's cash market. The NASDAQ 100, that dropped 4% yesterday. Let's get you set up for the trading day ahead now. We're joined by Patrick Armstrong, the Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth. Hey, Patrick, after Wednesday, what happened to the initial relief after the Fed meeting Wednesday?
I think it just dawned with a lot of people that the Fed seemed to indicate they weren't going to blink and that they would be willing to cause a recession to achieve their inflation targets. And I still think they will blink when push comes to shove, but the market started to price in recession during yesterday, where you can see that from actually treasuries. Got a bit of a rally late in the day as equities continued to sell off, oil sold off. Both of those basically point to the market pricing in higher recessionary chances.
Does the Fed care about the markets anymore? Well, especially the risk assets.
They must think about it, but I don't think they're being driven by it the way they were in 2018 when Powell did his 180. That was driven by the equity market. Now I think they've decided inflation's so far past their targets, they can't bother to worry about equities at this point. So I think inflation is first and foremost in their minds, unemployment number two, and equities a distant third at this point.
Do you have any thoughts on whether or not policy can have a meaningful impact on the inflation we have? I mean, filling up the car, that was $70 this morning. The food store, that was another $200.
Yeah, the unfortunate consequence, it's a pretty blunt instrument to deal with inflation is interest rates. The way it does is it kills demand. It creates unemployment. When you don't have a job, you're not filling up your car as much, those kind of things. So there's some pretty awful consequences from focusing on the demand side of things of the inflation when it's really the supply side of things. Creating at least half of the inflation right now would be supply bottlenecks, and Fed policy is impotent to deal with those kind of things. But it seems for the moment they've decided this is the policy they're going to do to fight inflation, and they think they're positioned to do that.
So is risk-reward looking any more attractive at these levels?
I bought equities yesterday. I bought Activision, which has got a cash offer from Microsoft, which should close at June next year, and you're getting a 20% return if that goes through. I bought some agribusiness equities that look pretty compelling to me. Mosaic, the largest potash reserves, is trading at about 8x earnings right now. And corporate bonds, for the first time in many, many years, well, maybe since 2020, they looked attractive as well right at the bottom. But you're getting a yield above, expected inflation now on investment-grade debt. So I actually think risk-return, corporate bonds, investment-grade looks pretty attractive now as well.
Now, have investors adjusted to the tighter monetary policy? Do they now have to start focusing on adjusting to a different earnings picture ahead?
It's really shocking me how analyst expectations, they came into this year expecting the S&P 500 to make $220 a share. Analysts are now expecting $228 a share in 2022. So earnings estimates haven't rolled over. I do think that has to happen based on a slowing economy and probably a bit of a margin squeeze on a lot of companies. S&P delivered 12.7% profit margin, which is unprecedented. And anytime you say unprecedented, that's usually the period you start to get a mean reversion. So I wouldn't be surprised to see margin expectations come down and earnings per share expectations come down. But I think the market's front-running earnings forecast at this point, where it sold off 23% while earnings have been revised higher this year.
Well, it is maybe an unanswerable question at this point, at least with any degree of accuracy, but is it a bottom for stocks that we've already passed?
I actually think we might be around the bottom now, but there's going to be a lot of moving parts. I think the stocks that are growing earnings are beneficiaries of they own assets that are in high demand. So I think commodity stocks have really sold off over the last month. They've got great returns year to date. I do think there's going to be some buy the dips there, and I think they're going to blow away earnings expectations. But I think the no-earnings tech-type companies, I think they still have a lot further to fall. I think there's still frothy valuations despite 70% sell-offs in a lot of those kind of companies. I think there may still be another 70% in those kind of stocks to fall.
All right, Patrick, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Patrick Armstrong, always a pleasure, the Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth. And as we look to futures after yesterday's sell-off, S&P E-mini futures right now, 35 points higher. That's up 1%. The Dow futures up 242 points. That's up 0.8%. And the Nasdaq E-mini futures 126 points higher, a rise of 1.1%. As we look at treasuries right now, the 10-year yield 3.21. That's up 2 basis points. 2-year at 3.16. That's up 7 basis points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg weather from meteorologist Rob Carolyn. Partly sunny, maybe an isolated afternoon thunderstorm. The high temperature, about 90 today. Clear to partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the mid-60s.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher as we close out this trading week. Yesterday, the S&P 500 closed at an 18-month low. Markets are rounding off a week highlighted by interest rate increases, including the Fed's biggest move since 1994. Greg Jensen, co-chief investment officer at Bridgewater Associates, says the Fed has a difficult job ahead.
They're serious about 2% inflation. They're going to have to crack the U.S. economy hard, and it's then going to take the easing to offset that and then the recovery before you see a bottom. So that's a long process. In the end, we think the Fed will blink and choose to sustain asset prices lower than they are today.
Greg Jensen at Bridgewater Associates says stocks may still fall lower because, unlike other bear markets, there's not support from an accommodative central bank.
Well, two other market notes this morning. Before the opening bell, the Fed chair, Jay Powell, makes welcoming remarks at an inaugural conference on the international role of the dollar. Today, also triple-witching Friday, the $3.5 trillion options expiration may lead to short covering that could bring temporary relief for the stock market.
And the yen is weaker this morning, John, after Japan and retained super easy monetary policy and yield curve control, defying pressure to track a global trend toward tighter monetary policy.
And back here in the U.S., President Biden weighing in on the economy. He says a recession can be avoided. Let's get the details now. Live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, John. The president is reiterating his message that the U.S. is in a stronger position than any nation in the world to overcome inflation. And he says this while he says a recession is not inevitable. He acknowledges that Americans are really down on the state of the country. He made these comments in an interview with the AP, his first since with a print outlet since taking office. And it took place a day after the Fed executed the biggest interest rate hike in almost three decades to cool inflation. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Looking at the pre-market now, shares of Adobe are down about 3%. The maker of software for design professionals reduced its annual revenue forecast. S&P futures are up 34 points. Dow futures up 235. NASDAQ futures are higher by 127 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 3/32, the yield 3.20%. NYMEX crude up 0.8% at $118.57 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% at $18.5270 an ounce. The yen right now trading at 134.79 against the dollar. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Nathan. 5:33 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. The UK government says WikiLeaks chief Julian Assange should be sent to the U.S. to face criminal espionage charges. UK Home Secretary Priti Patel rubber-stamped the transfer today, siding with the courts in Assange's long-running battle to avoid extradition. Assange has lost a series of legal battles to remain in the UK, but further appeal routes are available to him. New York Governor Kathy Hochul faced off against two challengers last night in the second and final televised debate before the June 28th Democratic primary. Hochul defended her record on guns and touting her own accomplishments during her nearly 10 months in office so far. The governor was asked, how would she bring people to the state?
I understand the frustration. I didn't say they're not coming back. I said we want them to come back. They may not be here 5 days a week, but we need them 3-4 days at least. And we're starting to see the trends in that direction. So don't give up on us.
Governor Hochul, who is seeking a full 4-year term, went up against New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams and U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi of Long Island. People in Alabama say a gunman opened fire on a small group meeting at a suburban church, killing 2 people and injuring a third. The attack took place last night at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in the Birmingham suburb of Vestavia Hills. Police Captain Shane Ware.
The suspect is in custody. I would like to reiterate that there is no threat to the community at this time.
The violence comes just over a month after a man opened fire on Taiwanese parishioners at a church in Southern California, killing 1 person and wounding 5. The mob invaded the Capitol, got within 40 feet of then-Vice President Mike Pence as his security team rushed him away on January 6, 2021. Those were among the harrowing new details from a House committee investigating the insurrection yesterday. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. The NBA season is over. It ended in Boston.
Let the celebration begin. With 4 titles in the last 8 years, the run is not done. The Golden State Warriors, once again, are NBA champions in 2022.
5-7 the game in San Francisco had the call. Warriors trailed early 14-2, then had a prolonged run of 35-8 to go up by 22. The Celtics in the fourth quarter got that down to 8, but Steph Curry hit big shots. He scored 34 points. The Warriors won 103-90. Not a single game in the finals decided by single digits. That's unprecedented. Curry had never won finals MVP before. He was the easy choice. And with 4 titles, Curry has to at least now be in the conversation for greatest players in NBA history. Andrew Wiggins last night, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. Jaylen Brown led Boston with 34. 9th title for Steve Curry, won 5 as a player. Now the Yankee win, even when they had to go to an emergency starter when Luis Severino was put on the COVID list. The Yanks held Tampa Bay to 3 hits and won 2-1 on an Anthony Rizzo home run. Bottom of the 9th inning, Rizzo drove in both runs, and the Yanks have won 14 of the last 15. The Mets came from 4-1 down, beat Milwaukee 5-4. Mark Canna, a 2-run homer. The bullpen with 5 2/3 innings of scoreless relief. Jam-packed leaderboard heading to round 2 of the U.S. Open today at Brookline, Mass. Canadian Adam Hadwin has the lead at 4-under. 12 golfers within 2 shots of him, including 4 past U.S. Open champions. Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, and Gary Woodland. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Yeah, it's time now for the Tri-State Business Report. For that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Ed Khoury.
Unionized workers from 5 Atlantic City casinos have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike. That tees up a labor fight that could paralyze a storied East Coast tourist hub. With the travel season well underway, the strike authorization is the latest to emerge from a reinvigorated labor movement. President Joe Biden's infrastructure czar says the Northeast Corridor rail line will get a lot of attention as far as spending is concerned. He calls the $12 billion Gateway plan a cathedral project. Gateway includes a new underwater tunnel between New York and New Jersey and replacing the existing one that was damaged by Hurricane Sandy. Carnival Cruise Line's Carnival Magic arrived at the Manhattan Cruise Terminal on Thursday. That event marks the company's return there to guest operations after more than 2 years. Carnival began sailing from New York back in 1998. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Khoury.
Thanks, Ed. It is 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Now let's check in now with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world. I'm Steve Potisk. On 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about just how unprepared airlines were for the rebound in summer travel demand.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. We're talking about how the average price of an electric vehicle has topped $60,000.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for KCBS in San Francisco, I'm reporting that Tesla CEO Elon Musk pledged no changes at Twitter for exceptional workers once he takes over the company.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg.
DAB Digital Radio in London, we've been speaking to the UK's digital minister, Julia Lopez, about plans to overhaul data protection rules after Brexit.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting major regional banks in Northeast Ohio have raised their prime-based lending rates following the Fed decision Wednesday.
And those are some of these stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
Although U.S. public school students faced plenty of challenges during the pandemic, most of them could at least count on one benefit, a guaranteed lunch. Waivers issued by the federal government in 2020 have enabled schools to serve meals free of charge to all students. With the waiver set to expire later this month, many of those kids are now at risk of going hungry. For the sake of their health and education, it's imperative for Congress to step in. The wisest course would be for lawmakers to extend the waivers for the upcoming school year, while mandating that states transition back to means testing in 2023. More than 2 years since schools first closed their doors, America's students are still struggling to recover. It shouldn't be asking too much to ensure that they all have enough to eat. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPI and go. Dow futures, 207 points higher. S&P futures up 31. The NASDAQ futures up 121 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And just ahead, traders may have come to grips with the path ahead for the Fed. Do they have to shift their focus to earnings now? We're going to speak to Christina Hooper, Invesco's Chief Global Market Strategist.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. This update is brought to you by Informatica. In the cloud, your data has the power to do the extraordinary. Manage data across any location in the cloud for accurate and actionable insights. More at Informatica.com. Stocks in Europe are rebounding along with U.S. futures after a rout triggered by fears of an economic downturn as major central banks close the liquidity taps. Treasury yields steadying. The dollar has snapped 2 days of losses. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 25 points, Dow futures up 160, NASDAQ futures are higher by 100 points. The DAX in Germany is up 0.8%, the CAC in Paris up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury is little changed now at 3.19% yield, the yield on the 2-year 3.13%. NYMEX crude is up 0.7% or 87 cents at $118.46 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1% or $2.20 at $18.52.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.0514 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2287. The yen is at 134.70. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. And now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. According to the January 6th committee, even though conservative attorney John Eastman was among multiple advisors and White House lawyers who told Trump the plan to overturn the election results was illegal, Eastman still aggressively pushed it. He later asked for a presidential pardon. The British government has approved the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the United States to face spying charges. The Warriors are the 2022 NBA champions. They beat the Celtics in Game 6. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-3. The Orioles won. The Nationals lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. John.
Michael, thank you. 5:49 on Wall Street. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. After a rout triggered by fears of an economic downturn, stock futures stabilizing this morning. So what next? Let's say good morning now to Christina Hoover, the Chief Global Market Strategist at Invesco. Have traders come to grips with the path ahead for the Federal Reserve?
Well, I think it's
unclear exactly what the path ahead is, but certainly traders are digesting and getting a little more comfortable with a 75 basis point hike. We have to recognize, though, that it hasn't happened in almost 30 years. So it can be jarring, and the digestion is going to take time. And the reaction, of course, is going to create some turbulence as the markets continue to process this.
Okay. Do we now have to shift to the earnings picture ahead?
Well, certainly that's going to be a big part of where stocks go this year. And so earnings is going to be very important, but we're also going to want to keep very close eye on the key data indicators that are going to determine the path ahead for the Fed as well. We know the Fed wants to front-load rate hikes, but they're also clear they are very data-dependent. We just saw an enormous pivot over the course of a few days. The Fed had anticipated raising rates about 50 basis points until they got CPI and inflation expectations last Friday and made the decision to do 75 basis points. So we want to follow that, too, because there is no set path.
Well, what does this all say about margins and perhaps margin compression?
Well, that is certainly going to be an issue, but that happens in slowdowns. Of course, this is a rather rapid slowdown, just given that the Fed is truly engineering it. So we're going to want to follow that closely, and there are going to be some companies that fare better than others. So it's a time to be rather discerning and selective.
Is risk-reward looking any more attractive at these levels?
Oh, yes, it is. For those long-term investors, if you invested today or started to dollar cost average into the market, I think you'd be quite happy a year from now, 2 years from now. There is, though, a fair amount of turbulence going on, and as earnings get downwardly revised for a number of companies, there are going to be even more opportunities presenting themselves. It's hard to time it, though, so I do think opportunities are starting to abound now, and markets look rather attractive.
Well, what sectors do you like over others?
Well, technology has been beaten down so much. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't more to go, but being selective, avoiding the spec tech, finding those companies that have strong balance sheets, good cash flow, ultimately they could provide very, very good growth in a challenging slowdown.
Can bond yields be a pretty good alternative to other risk assets?
They can be, absolutely. Bonds are looking a lot more attractive than they did. And of course, it's important to be well diversified. So this is a time for investors, especially if they were underweight fixed income, to start to increase exposure. I will give the caveat, though, that I think we want to be underweighting risky credit in this environment.
Yeah. Well, why is that? Just because of the path forward?
Yes, because we are in a slowdown, because profit margins are going to be coming under pressure. So we want to be more selective and err on the side of quality.
What do you look for when you seek out a capitulation in the markets? What signs are you looking for?
Well, there are a variety of signs that technicians look for. I do think one measure that has worked well in the past is hitting that high level on the VIX, that 40 or so level on the VIX. We certainly saw that as a very helpful indicator in March of 2020. There are a variety of others. I do also believe that the trigger for a market turnaround right now could very well be another pivot by the Fed, a more dovish pivot this time. And that won't happen overnight, right? We know the Fed wants to continue to be aggressive in the shorter term, but given that they're going to be data dependent, they could pivot again, get more dovish, and that could be a real catalyst for stocks moving up.
Very interesting. Christina Hooper, Chief Market Strategist at Invesco. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for our Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to a legal story we're watching this morning. A closely watched case that tested the boundaries of applying human rights to animals. In a divided decision, New York's highest court ruled that Happy the elephant is not entitled to legal personhood and a right to bodily liberty. In 2006, Happy became the first elephant to pass a mirror recognition test that indicates self-awareness like humans. Animal rights advocates argued that should mean that she should be considered autonomous and qualify for the same protections against unlawful imprisonment as humans. The decision means Happy will remain alone in a one-acre enclosure at the Bronx Zoo, where she's been kept for 45 years. And for more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks with Elizabeth Stein of the Non-Human Rights Project, Happy's New York Council.
What do you say to the people who think this legal fight is absurd because an animal is not a human being?
Well, if the argument is that an animal is not a human, that is absolutely true. We are not arguing that an animal is a human. What we are arguing is that human beings have certain rights, such as the fundamental right to bodily liberty protected by habeas corpus, which we believe is not limited to human beings. And based on the extraordinary intrinsic nature of elephants, their autonomy, their extraordinary cognitive complexity, we believe that Happy as an elephant is entitled to the recognition of that same right that a human being has. The fact that a human being has this right should never preclude a non-human animal, such as Happy the elephant, from having that same right. And in the eyes of the law, a person is not the same thing as a human being. They're not synonymous terms. A person is merely anything, whether it be an individual or an entity, that has the capacity for a right.
You were asking the court to make a novel ruling here. What was your argument?
We presented the factual basis for Happy's autonomy, for the fact that she is this autonomous, extraordinarily cognitively complex, non-human animal who suffers the same way that a human being would suffer in this imprisonment, that she should be out traveling miles a day as elephants do, foraging, planning. Elephants have a true sense of self. They remember the past, they know the present, and can plan for the future. The females, such as Happy, are matriarchs. They are in herds. They mourn the dead. They play. They frolic. They roam. So what we were saying to the court is, based on common law principles of science and fairness and equity and justice more than anything, the court needed to evolve the common law to be able to recognize Happy's common law right to bodily liberty. And once recognizing this right, her imprisonment is unlawful, and the remedy for habeas corpus is release from the unlawful imprisonment.
And that's Elizabeth Stein of the Non-Human Rights Project speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio or by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures up 33 points on this Friday morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.